Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Halliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first time deposit offer up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the app store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first time deposit offer up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP. That's 1-800-639-8783. Or text next step to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 Hope line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the latest edition of the Woke Bros. Of course, I'm Big Waz, a.k.a. Wazdy Lambray, joined as always by my brother, my partner, Nando Vila, with his books. He's so smart. He's so beautiful.
That's
don't
right,
we
yeah.
just hate him, people?
Yeah. Got the books, dude.
You gotta have the books.
Books,
joined
check
as
them
always,
out.
As always, by Rob Lopez on the ones and threes, keeping the trains running on time. On today's show, Barack Obama finally comes out of the closet. No, not that closet, you little pervs, you filthy animals. A different closet. We're going to get into an interview that he gave on his massive, expansive, ridiculous book tour. It's like,
it's never ending.
It's ridiculous. Again, we need to catch you guys up on the stimulus. Bernie Sanders has obviously, because it's Bernie, he came out and addressed the elephant in the room, which is that Joe Manchin and his bipartisan stimulus package is hogwash. It doesn't do shit for working people. So he's proposed something different. We'll get into that. There's a mass worker strike in the country of India. Probably the world record for yeah. as far as number of people to go on strike at once. We're going to get into that and the implications of that and what all of that means. But first, I don't know if it's that the campaign has now gone into transition mode, Nando, and yeah. they're filling out cabinets, or if it's that we just remodeled the kitchen. But another week of cabinet talk, Nando.
Yeah.
More cabinet talk. David Dayen, who does a great job just generally speaking, like, that, yeah. you know, he's a really good reporter. Like, he does the work.
Yeah.
So I got respect for what he does. He wrote a piece in The American Prospect about the process by which Joe Biden is filling out his cabinet. And I gotta say, Nando, just reading it was so deeply satisfying.
it was written for this show.
Yeah, 100%. It's like, it's obviously we want him to fill out his cabinet with competent people who are gonna do the work for the people who need it the most, right? Like, that would be our dream. So in that sense, obviously we're saddened by the process that Biden and his freaking team are going by. Filling out these positions. But on the other hand, as soon, like from the beginning of Biden's campaign, to when he ultimately won the primary, to throughout the presidential campaign when it looked like he was going to win and he finally wins. We talked about, look, Biden is as establishment, as corporate a Democrat as you are going to find in the party. Like, in that sense, he is in the right wing of the Democratic Party. Like, there's no other way. He's not a moderate in any way. Mm. Obviously, he's not AOC or Bernie. But again, he's not even a Sherrod Brown. He's not even a, you know, Elizabeth Warren, who we're not going to get into today. he's straight up a right winger. He's a right wing Democrat. Yeah. And how we know this, Nando, is, you know, David Dayen does, he does a masterful job of laying out the people who their backers are and the complications that arise when Joe Biden has come out and done this whole, like, muscular, I'm the king of diversity. You're never going to see more women or gays or blacks or Mexicans. I'm the king of the diverse guys, right? And he comes out and does that. But you and I both know, because we talk about it every single week on his show, that he is beholden to the power structure of American business. There's no two ways about that. And how Dayen goes about basically illustrating this is through the curious case of Representative Marsha Fudge, a Democrat from Ohio. She's been working with the Biden campaign that she's backed by, of course, the Congressional Black Caucus.
She is black.
She is black. Oh, yeah. It's important to note she's black. Yeah. She campaigned on to work at USDA, to work to become the agriculture secretary, essentially, because she's been working on the agriculture committee within the House for 12 years now. She feels very, she feels like that's her lane. She knows a lot about the issues. She feels like she can go in there and help. Of course, Biden, Biden had other plans in mind, Nando. He wanted to get Heidi Heitkamp in there, who is so deeply in the pocket of big agriculture, which is, you know, the conglomerates that are in charge of the seed industry, big dairy and meat processing. So, of course, Biden said, no, I mean, I'm just going to get a woman who is beholden to the corporate class of this, that this department would oversee. Duh, it's woke.
Yeah.
She's a woman. Yeah. This is diverse. Duh. Yeah. Hello. And so, people got pissed. The Congressional Black Caucus got pissed, of course. And they're like, we backed you. And, you know, part of the problem is politics here, Nando, and that, like, the Congressional Black Caucus is like, we want a freaking scalp, right? Essentially, like, not a scalp, but we want a trophy. We helped get you elected. You need to put this person in your cabinet. All right, well, we can't put her in USDA. How about we just give her HUD? Fuck it. She doesn't know shit about housing.
Yeah.
Give
her HUD. Shut her the fuck up.
She has nothing to do with this. Shut her the fuck up. Shut the Congressional Black Caucus up. Let's throw her to HUD. And this is problematic on, like, and before I continue, the guy who ultimately gets the job is Tim Vilsack. He was Obama's agriculture secretary, but in the intervening years,
he's a white guy. The funny part also is that he's a white guy.
He's a white guy, sure. But in the intervening years, of course, the last 4 years, what was his job? He lobbied the government on behalf of Big Dairy. So it's like, it's just fucking perfect. It's perfect, Nando.
Yeah, Marsha Fudge, you know, she really wanted the agricultural secretary job because, like you said, she had experience in it as part of the Agriculture Committee in Congress, but also because the agricultural secretary is the person who, for whatever reason, oversees the implementation of SNAP, which is food stamps, as we understand them colloquially. And, you know, it's obviously an issue that she knows a lot about. It's very near to her heart. Mm-hmm. She thinks that there's a lot that can be done within the existing policy framework to improve a program like food stamps, which is crucial and one of the few small pittances that working class people and the poor get in this country, and which a lot of people like actually absolutely rely on. We're in a situation right now where 50 million Americans go hungry every year. You know, it's an outrage, and food stamps, and without food stamps, that number would be, you know, probably 100 million. It's crazy to imagine. So She really wanted the job. She's qualified for the job, but she's not beholden to big agriculture. You know, this was something that for whatever reason, the Biden administration felt was important to cater to big agriculture, which I don't even understand why, because Democrats basically get killed in rural areas in rural states. Like, if there was ever a time to just like say, fuck it, let's just go in another direction, it would be now. You know, there's all this talk, and Dayan points this out in the article, there's all this talk about like frustration with people, poor rural people who vote mm-hmm. Republicans, and like, why would they vote against their interests? It's like the Democrats have overseen the monopolization of farming in this country by a handful of like large multi national agricultural corporations as much as any other party, like that, and that has destroyed the rural people's way of life in this country. So,
and hold on, before you go on, because I think people who are listening to this, our liberal friends who might be listening to this, will be like, well, the Republicans aren't doing much better on the corporate side and blah, blah, blah. Okay, cool. But they're actually courting their vote in other ways. Yeah. They're not calling them hayseeds. They're not pretending to be these cosmopolitan, fancy, foofy people. They kiss their asses. They tell them, you're America. You're the backbone. You're the realest American that exists. They kiss their ass on the back end. Yes, they do fuck them and their financial interests. But on the back end, they're calling them the salt of the earth, the heartlanders, all of this. All they do is they cater to these people all day,
on culture issues, right?
On culture issues. So the Dems aren't giving them
offer
shit.
Offer them nothing. Yeah.
Economically.
Yeah.
And obviously don't offer them shit culturally. And again, this is the point that we try to make on this shit week in and week out. Again, people can say, well, those people are just so dumb. They're going to vote against their interests. It's like this smug judgment that liberals have for rural type of people. Like, they're so simple, back-minded, you know, they're fucking their cousins and shit, so they're idiots. They can't know any better about who to vote for. Meanwhile, it's like, bro, like, look at the Dems. Look at the hypocrisy of everything they do and claim to stand for. Like, Joe Biden just straight up was like, let's throw Heidi Heitkamp in there because we need the agriculture industry needs a seat at the table in my administration. It's lunacy.
Yeah, and then because it's this crazy kind of thing about diversity. Kind of, it's the sickest version of the. I mean, we all support kind
of course,
more diverse, you know, all this stuff. But like, what's happening is this crazy thing where they're just trying to find the diverse person to carry water for corporate interests, and they're kind of tying themselves in knots, trying to do it. So they throw Marsha Fudge into HUD, which is a department that she has actively said in public on the record that she does not feel qualified and does not want to be the head of HUD, you know? And Biden's like, well, you can't get the agriculture secretary because we need to cater to big ag for whatever reason. We'll throw you HUD. It's like, but I don't know anything about HUD. I don't know anything about housing and the policy of housing and urban development. There's the example of Julian Castro, who was also a mayor. And we all know he ran for president. He was Obama's secretary of HUD, and he didn't know shit about HUD. And he got in there, and it took him like 2 years to basically just figure out like how to turn the lights on, you know, the basics of housing policy. It's not easy in this country. It's complex, and you need people with experience.
Before you go on, Nando, I want to remind people that this was allegedly part of Biden's appeal. The idea that they would be filling out the cabinet with, at the very least, they'd be competent. Ben Carson, who doesn't give a shit about housing.
And doesn't know anything about it.
Doesn't know anything about it, is, you know, appointed to that position by President Trump. And there's all this outrage amongst liberals about, you know, this is why it's important. We have to get Biden in there at all costs because this guy is putting people who aren't qualified. And it's like, guys, when you make these arguments, they're in bad faith. Like, this is why the Dems have no credibility, man. This is why you don't offer people the cultural shit. And the shit that you claim to be great at, you stink at it, bro. Yeah. You fucking stink at it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's the sort of minority caucuses, you know, like the sort of professional Latino class, the professional Black political class and stuff, like, they fight for these representational things in leadership positions. But then even then they can't even, you know, it's like they're getting screwed over even on that front, you know, where they're just kind of like tossing them crumbs it's such a dead end. It's such a dead end in so many ways. And like, we're seeing what happened now with the Secretary of Defense, which is an incredibly important position, literally running the freaking Pentagon, you know, running the U.S. war machine. And they tried to get this woman in there, Michelle Flournoy, who is just like she's a literal hawk. Like, she has wings sticking out of her out of the sides.
But she's a woman.
And they're like, whoa. But then progressive activists were like, yo, we can't have this like just absolute warmonger running defense. Okay, they're gonna block her. Okay, we'll find a black guy. They're not gonna be able to say anything about the black guy. They find a black guy, this guy Lloyd Austin, and it turns out, and this is like what's so damaging about this kind of thing, he's a general. Like, he was a general not that long ago. And then when he left, this is like beside the point, but when he left the military, he went on the board of Raytheon, which is one of the most evil companies in the world. But the important thing is that the Secretary of Defense, like, we in this country have, in theory, civilian control of the armed forces, right? That we have democratic oversight of the armed forces, that we, the people, control our military, that we have civilians in charge of them. At the top, it's the president as the commander in chief. But then in theory, the Secretary of Defense has to be a civilian. He should not be someone from the military. They made an exception under Trump to put Mattis in there. They had to like literally like make an exception in the laws in Congress to be able to confirm Mattis as the Secretary of Defense because he had not been away from the military long enough to run the department. And now they're going to have to do the same thing with this guy. So like that principle of just having a civilian running the Pentagon is just out the window. Now we're just going to have generals running the Pentagon, which is something that's very dangerous, you know, like in the long run. Like, I'm not saying this guy's going to like implement a military coup or anything like that. But we're just, again, just slowly eroding the democratic foundations in this country to just more and more autocratic rule and less democracy. And this is just like a small example of it, but an important one, you know, like that. By using diversity as a sort of blanket to hide the real fundamental issues, which is that this guy is a general and he's also on the board of friggin' Raytheon. So it's like the worst of both worlds. It's very frustrating and unbelievably depressing.
And again, you know, it's not to say I told you so, but like it's obvious what they're trying to do. Like the reason why... The only reason to go out and scream to the mountaintops about we're going to be the most diverse cabinet in the history of the world is because that's all you want people to talk about. Like, that's the only reason to scream that, right? Like, that's the only reason to lead with that, because God knows you never lead with black people in their issues or brown people in their issues in any other meaningful sense. Like, you never care about, like, the material needs of black and brown people for real. They're just fucking human meat shields at this point for the exact same corporate establishment agenda that gets you creamed in elections and gets you fucking just, like, erodes the credibility of the party. Like... You know, I was listening to Hayes the other day. He had the lady in South Florida. I forget her name, man. She's a...
Debbie Mukasel Powell.
Yes, and she lost in South Florida as a Democrat.
She kneecapped Bernie over the Castro comments. She was like the front line of that.
Right. I remember that well. And she made a point. She was like, man, one of the only Democrats that ended up winning out here ran as an independent and didn't run as a Democrat.
Yeah,
like,
the mayor.
What do you think that means? That means the brand, the name Democrat has no credibility, bro. Like none whatsoever. And it's so obvious why. It's like, and again, you know, the funny thing is, Nando, as like political junkies and especially you as like a professional political, you know, a lot of times we get to wag our fingers and shake our heads at our normie friends when they talk about the duopoly, or when they talk about Democrats and Republicans are all the same. And I'm just like, yo, you know, it's a little bit more nuanced than that, blah, blah, blah. But like, it's kind of fucking true, man. At the very top, at the tippy top when it comes to Biden, Schumer, Pelosi, McConnell, you know, Paul
they agree
Ryan,
on more no things than they disagree
on. Everything, dude.
On more things, there are some disagreements and they are meaningful, but people would be shocked at how much they agree.
When you think about Paul Ryan, Joe Biden, Mitt Romney, Mitch McConnell, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, that's a party in itself.
In foreign policy, they more or less agree on 100%. Like, there is very, very little daylight from the average Republican elected official and the average Democrat elected official in foreign policy. Like, that is the one area where it's almost exactly the same. Yeah, the Democrats would like to do a little bit more social spending, but it's not a lot. And they both would like to cut. They both want to cut Social Security and Medicare.
They both want the corporations to essentially do whatever it is they want in this country. No repercussions, no accountability. The only people who face accountability are normal people like you and I. Corporations can just, with impunity, they can just do whatever the fuck they want. Because again, I just don't understand. Because there were, if the sort of argument was being made that, say, you know, Big Dairy needs a seat at the table because, you know, they want to ensure that their workers, their wages stay the same and that they could pay their pensions forever and that their retirement fund could be there. That's not what they're doing. Those are not the interests they're protecting. They're protecting the interests of the fucking shareholders and board members, and that's it, bro. It's not some larger, wider constituency. Certainly not us, the consumer. Certainly not their workers. It's just the most powerful people in the company whose interests are being protected. If the argument was being made these guys, they need to have an open dialogue with the company because they take care of so many people and this shit matters. I would be like, you know what? I fucking hate corporations, but shit, man, these guys are paying out pensions. They are giving these guys respectable wages. Their people are able to live dignified lives. Fuck, man. You know, sure, the CEO's a prick and he's richer than he needs to be, but shit, man, maybe they do need a seat at the table. That's not what's happening.
Waz, the one thing we do got to laugh at, though, is that, remember Pete Buttigieg, our friend Pete Buttigieg, historically dropped out despite coming in second place in both Iowa and New Hampshire before Super Tuesday. No one's ever done that, mostly because Barack Obama called him and told him, Pete, you're never going to have more leverage than you do right now in this moment. And, you know, if you want a future in Democratic Party politics, you'll drop out, do the right thing, support Joe Biden. He did that. He was expecting to get Secretary of State, something big like that. he got nothing. They offered him the Department of Veteran Affairs. He was like, no fucking way. I want that. Now they're going to offer him. Now it looks like they're offering him the ambassadorship to China. They're going to send that motherfucker to China. Yeah.
They're sending him to China. Sweet.
They're sending him to China. Get away from these people don't realize this is what, they thought that they were going to get something. They thought, Warren thought she was going to get a seat at the table, you know?
Nope.
Pete Buttigieg thought he was going to get a seat at the table. And that's not how that works, man. They're not going to give you a seat at the table. They don't give a fuck about you.
Yeah. And now they're going to send you off to China. Is carrying water for that.
For Neera Tanden.
Yeah, that Tanden lady who's so awful. It's depressing. I would encourage all of you guys to read the David Dayen piece. It's extremely illuminating.
He writes a newsletter every morning called Sanitize, which I highly, highly recommend to really figure out if you read one thing about American politics every day, if you just needed one little quick summary, I recommend David Dayen's Sanitized. It really does. He does a great job.
Yeah, he's one of the best in the biz, so make sure you check that out.
Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? I know I've been through it. I've had problems at work, problems in relationships, even problems as a parent. Sometimes you don't know where to turn to or who to talk to, particularly when you don't want to talk to someone who knows you, who might have a bias or might hold what you're going to say against you. You want to talk to someone who's experienced and licensed and at the same time distant and removed from you. BetterHelp is here to help. They'll assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. This is professional counseling done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas. The service is available for clients worldwide. I know many of our listeners are listening to us from other countries, whether it's Canada, Australia, somewhere in Europe, somewhere in Asia, or somewhere in Africa. Look, you guys can access this as well. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available for those who need it. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit their website. Read the testimonials. They're posted daily. For instance, this one from user NU after counseling with Denise Wall Marlin for 2 years on issues concerning depression, stress, anxiety, and self-esteem. Quote, I have found Denise to be an excellent counselor. She has broad experience in all techniques to get rid of anxiety and ruminating thoughts and always puts things in perspective for me. I recommend her 100%. Hell, I hear that one. I want to sign up with Denise because I know ruminating thoughts and anxiety is something I deal with all the time. So here's what you can do, and I'll do it too. Visit BetterHelp.com/BOM. That's Better, H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. It's a special offer going right now for our listeners here on BOM. Get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/BOM. That's BetterHelp.com/BOM.
What was that committee back in Barry's day? It was like the team of six or the...
The gang of six?
The gang of six.
Or and, the Simpson Bowl, the Simpson
yeah,
Bowls
the Simpson
commission.
Bowls, the Simpson
Yeah, the gang of six
Bowls.
Was on immigration. Yes. Simpson Bowls.
Simpson
was, yeah.
Bowls was like, oh man.
Alan Simpson and Erskine Bowls. Yep. A committee to get together a bipartisan agreement to cut Social Security.
Right. And
the only good, yeah, maybe the only one of the only, like, with Social Security and Medicare, like the only really good American welfare programs that really sustain basically our seniors from basically dying in the street. Yeah, they wanted to cut that. Yeah.
And it's important. And I remember it because, you know, I remember reading a lot of Charles Pierce at the time, and he was the first person that I was reading that was like, yo, whenever you hear bipartisan and people are like celebrating it, you already know it's trash. Like, that's automatically, you know, bipartisan if Meet the Press loves it, if CBS loves it on their Sunday show, it's trash. If Politico loves it, you know it's trash. Like, once you hear bipartisan, you know something trash is about to happen.
Yeah.
So, of course, once I hear, you know, the Dems and the Republicans in the Senate, and then I see the first name is Joe Manchin and the next name is Mitt Romney, that they're going to come up with the stimulus bill that's going to save our lives, I automatically know it's going to be trash. And I read through it and I'm like, yeah, it's trash. And then Mitch McConnell's like, you want to see trash? Let me take you to Staten Island really quickly. And just was just like, no, this is impossible. I need corporate protection. Fuck 6 months. I want 18 months of corporate protection. I don't want my people getting blamed for forcing their workers to go back to work in a pandemic and their workers getting sick and dying and all of that shit. Fuck that. And so, you know, Bernie comes out with his own version of the bill. Of course, if there was any human, and this is the thing too, Nando, that really pisses me off about the Dems. Like, Bernie's not going to be able to peel off any Republicans in order to pass a substantive bill, right? Like, it's just not going to happen. Like, McConnell's going to close ranks. Like, Bernie's not going to talk 10 Republicans into signing on to a bill with the Democrats and, you know, get something going for just to be a human being, right? Like, just to not be a complete and utter monster. It's not going to be able to happen. But I guarantee guarantee you, if the shoe was on the other foot, there'd be Dems peeling off left and right, bro.
Oh, yeah.
Left and right.
Yeah, I mean, and Bernie went on MSNBC this morning and basically, you know, made the eminently sane and reasonable point, which is somehow seen as unreasonable in this politics, that, you know, there's always money when there's going to be a big corporate tax break, when there's going to be a giant defense spending bill. There's plenty of money, endless amounts of money. I mean, we've talked about here the corporate funding cannon that the Fed pulled out last summer during the CARES Act. I mean, there's just plenty of money to go around. But when it's like children who are sick and dying on the streets, we can't afford that. We can't afford that. Even though it's a fraction of the amount of money spent on all those things. No, I'm sorry. Like, it's very sad that the children are sick and dying on the streets, but we can't afford it. And so no one thinks that the Bernie's version of the bill is going to pass or whatever, but you need to put up a fight. You need to show some leadership. I mean, and you need to sort of rally around an agenda that helps people, because if not, you're just going to continue this kind of slide down that is going to end up in disaster. I mean, the asymmetry in American politics is something that's just striking to see. It's just the Republican Party just constantly more rabid, going further to the right, and they're pulling the Democrats with them. I mean, that's the thing, is like, because the Democrats see themselves as this kind of reasonable centrist party, if one party goes way to the right, they're going to go along where the center of gravity is. And someone has to put a stop to that. Like, someone has to stand up and say, no, we cannot continue doing this. I mean, we are seeing such a profound failure of leadership in this pandemic on every single level, that it's going to create a instability in our politics that we just can't really comprehend right now. We really can't imagine what it's going to look like in the next few years, because everything is going to be so discredited. And of course, like, the Republicans are evil and the worst, but without a true opposition party, and now that the Democrats are going to take over the government, without a party that is willing to govern, that is willing to actually do things to help people, the effects can be disastrous. And you know, thank God we have people like Bernie, people like AOC, who like stand up for basic, the most bare minimum that you could expect a government to do. But
we're
sadly,
not talking about
like
breaking
the
up the
minority.
Banks here, Nando. We're just talking.
They're not
about,
even. Yeah, they're not. The
we're
basic
just talking
bare
about
minimum.
Helping people in a fucking pandemic.
The bare fucking minimum. You know, and the Dems can't even do that. I mean, I just saw the news just broke right now that there is this new big spending bill sell basically massive amounts of weapons to the United Arab Emirates. The Democrats were united in opposing it. They were going to be able to block it in the Senate. But Kyrsten Sinema and Representative Kelly from Arizona, the two senators from Arizona, have just broken rank and voted with the Republicans, allowing the sale of arms to go through to the UAE. Yeah. So that, there you have it. The freaking Dems. Just corporate, spineless.
That's your Democratic Party. Shouts to the libs. Moving on, we want to talk about this mass worker strike in India. 250 million people on a worker strike for better wages, better working conditions. You know, basically what all strikes come down to. Nando, man, this is historic. It's unprecedented.
It's really crazy. I mean, India, as we know, is the second largest country in the world in terms of population. It's the largest democracy in the world. It has over 1 billion people. 250 million people are out on strike. That's a quarter of the population. It's a quarter billion people really out on strike. And, you know, I don't want to get too deep into it because neither of us are India experts, but the big picture is that India is run by a guy named Narendra Modi, who is kind of like a Trump figure. He's like a sort of hyper nationalist guy who, you know, whips up kind of right wing xenophobic talking points and is kind of seen as a right wing populist, when in reality, he's just a trying to implement business friendly neoliberal reforms. And in September, he passed a couple laws through his parliament, which is controlled by his party, that basically deregulate both the agricultural sector and the labor sector, basically strip away regulations, make it easier for corporations to fix prices, to fire workers, to, you know, all that stuff. So it started off as like a big farmer strike, which is what's interesting to me is that, you know, India for many, many years had basically government instituted price controls for farmers. You know, like they had a bare minimum price that they could sell their crops for. And of course, the big corporate agricultural companies hated that because they would want to buy these crops for cheaper. And so they deregulated that. And it's brought out 250 million people on strike, the largest strike in human history. Obviously, it's getting zero attention in the media. Zero. I mean, if you do a Google search, I mean, you might find articles in like the World Socialist Workers website and Jacobin. Nah. But it's not in any
corporate
in the New York
media
Times.
Not don't want to cover that and get
they're not going to cover that
getting yeah. funny ideas like no
yeah
yeah and you know the proof
think about a protest in Iran think about a protest in Iran or the protest in Hong Kong, which, you know, a legitimate protest, don't get me wrong, but they wall-to-wall coverage, something like that. The largest strike, a quarter of a billion people. I mean, it's I don't understand how you can even wrap your mind around this. Not a single mention in the New York Times, not a single mention on CNN. It's just nowhere to be found in the corporate media.
Yeah, and proof of that, honestly, is when they called what the NBA players did during the playoffs a boycott. That was a worker strike. That was a strike.
Yeah, absolutely. They're millionaires, but they're workers at the same time.
They're workers. That was a worker strike. We're not fucking picking up. We're not picking up the ball today. We're not working today.
Yeah.
Straight up and down. But they didn't want to frame it that way, and that's not by accident, people. That they don't want you guys thinking that, you know, collectively getting together and exerting your power is a good idea. No. Stay placated in your little job and go to your cubicle and play with your iPhone. That's what they want you to keep doing. They don't want you thinking that you have power. They don't want you thinking that. They don't. And so they would never frame it like that in the media. And it doesn't surprise me that the biggest outlets have completely ignored the story. But we thought we should let you guys know about that.
Yeah.
And finally, guys, you know, I'm pretty excited about this, Nando, because last week we debuted a brand new segment called... maybe Barry was kind of a douche and still is kind of a douche and was a douchey guy and I don't know why everybody still loves him. So, or something like that, which is a segment in which we delve into Barry being kind of fucking annoying and just making us want to tear our freaking heads off. this comes to us courtesy of Jonathan Chait from New York Mag. Jonathan,
who is the chief Obama propagandist. He wrote a book about the Obama presidency, which was basically like that he was like the greatest president to ever live. And
Jonathan Chait.
Friendly interview.
He's your centrist favorite centrist, right? Like he is as centrist as it gets. But and this is a pretty long passage, so I do want to read to you. And I mentioned that Barry came out the closet at the top of the show. But I'm going to read this passage to you guys. And this is Barry sort of talking about a leftward critique of his administration and just the concept that they were too fucking neoliberal for their own good. And here goes Barry's quote. He says... and it's the combination of no holds barred free market ideology and Milton Friedman's arguments about shareholder value and the weakening of norms inside the corporate boardroom combined with foreign competition that starts unraveling that social compact. What is true is that there are a bunch of Democrats who start saying, well, yeah, maybe the free market can do it better. Maybe we don't need these regulations. And maybe unions are too stodgy and outdated and preventing increases in productivity. And the key is that we have to grow the pie and not just worry about dividing the pie. And then Ronald Reagan comes in, wins over a big chunk of those same workers in a coalition, despite doing everything he can to bust unions. And a bunch of Democrats think, look, this isn't going to work for us politically. And what's a fair criticism is the fact that through Clinton and even through how I thought about these issues when I first came into office, I think there was a residual willingness to accept the political constraints that we inherited from the post-Reagan era. That you had to be careful about being too bold on some of these issues. And probably there was an embrace of market solutions to a host of problems that wasn't entirely justified.
No shit, Sherlock.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have just witnessed Barack Hussein Obama coming out of two closets at once. Not only does one neoliberalism exist, he's acknowledging the existence of the ideology of neoliberalism because that, and for those of you who don't know, like, amongst certain, I guess you could call it academic quarters, Nando, like, you know, the foofier people on the in liberals would be like, oh, neoliberalism is just this like amorphous term that doesn't mean anything. It's bullshit. You guys are just talking. And what are you talking about? There's no such thing as neoliberalism. Blah, 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 blah. So there's a denial that neoliberalism as an ideology even exists at all. And so Barry's like, no, it exists. And yes, I was neoliberalist.
I was one
neoliberal
of
as fuck during my administration, Nando.
So what it basically is the areas in which, broadly speaking, Republicans and Democrats agree on, which is mostly that market-based solutions are the way forward for problems, that the state cannot do anything to solve these things, that you better just leave it to the market to fix things. That's broadly speaking neoliberalism. And it's that wasn't the case that Democrats used to believe that before the late 1970s. Basically, Jimmy Carter was the first Democrat to really start that ideology, which is why he was challenged from his left by his own party in re-election. Ted Kennedy ran against him. A sitting president in his own party. It's as if Bernie ran against Obama in 2012. Yep. You know, it's the same thing. Ted Kennedy, who was like, you know, he's not like some radical. He was just the sort of norm of the Democratic right. Party at the time. He was horrified by the Democrats' rightward turn. You know, and it's like in the 1980s when Reagan and Thatcher.
Hold on, slow down, Nando. Yeah. I want to explain to people when we say, because I had people. Because I want to be a part of the group of people who makes words have meaning again.
Yeah.
I got yelled at by a bunch of idiots because The Athletic launched a new vertical called Culture, and I said that it would be left of center sports coverage, essentially meaning center sports coverage is team transactions, game analysis, blah, blah, blah. This would be like human interest stuff, right? Like nothing to do with immigration or tax policy, just like left of center. Like, that's it. That's all that would mean in the sports context. And so when Nando says a rightward turn, people are going to hear you say that and think that means, oh, we want to cancel abortions, or we love Jesus now, or because that's what people consider right wing. No, right wing means the people who already have the power and the money, we want to keep it with them. That's all it means. That's what it means to be right wing. Straight up and down. So when Nando says Jimmy Carter was shifting the Democrats right, it means they were shifting the priorities of the party to the direction of the people who already had all the power and the influence anyway. That's what it means to be right wing. Continue, Nando. Sorry.
Yeah. No, and it's you know, like Reagan and Thatcher, who basically ruled over the United States and the UK in the 1980s, were radical right wingers. Even at the time, they were considered radical right wingers by people in their own party. Like Nixon thought Reagan was like a right wing lunatic. And if you watch this season of The Crown, you'll see that members of Thatcher's own party were like, "Oh my God, what is this woman doing? She's fucking insane." But they won. They won, and they sort of created a new normal. And like when Thatcher was asked after she, you know, years after her prime ministership, what her greatest achievement was, she said Tony Blair, right? Because Tony Blair, who's broadly speaking like the sort of left of center politician who ruled over the UK in the 1990s and early 2000s. But he adopted all of her premises.
Right.
Same thing with the Democratic Party post-Reagan. This is what Obama is talking about. They basically, this right-wing lunatic took power in America. And then the Democratic Party was like, yeah, he's right about everything. We more or less agree with him on everything. And Bill Clinton was the product of that. He was a, like, Bill Clinton, 20 years before his presidency, would have been considered a right-wing Republican. That is a fact. And he would have, he was to the right of Nixon. Like, Bill Clinton was not to the left of Nixon. Bill Clinton was to the right of Nixon. Right. You know, because the center of gravity in American politics shifted so dramatically to the right that even the left party went to the right. So yeah, Obama is basically admitting that, and then admitting
And can we talk about, sorry to interrupt, Nando, can we talk about what he, and the important part is he talked about, we don't want to fuck with trade unions. Those people don't get it. And I think what, you know, and you know what the dynamic is there is these, let's face it, cone-headed liberals who went to their nice schools are just like, I'm sorry, these union shop stewards, like, they're fucking lunkheads. They're ignorant.
And they don't watch Broad City like I do.
Exactly. And yes, they might not want to go to the Met or the MoMA, and they probably say wicked things about Mexicans, Negroes, and gays when they're at their own dinner table at their house. Sure. But let's face it, trade unions delivered outcomes for normal people. Yeah. And I love this concept of growing the pie, because Nando, the pie's fucking grown.
Oh, yeah.
All we need to do is size, grow the pie.
The size of the U.S. economy has tripled since 1980. And median wages for the bottom 70% of people have gone down.
Exactly. And the freaking argument these people were making, so all that went to the top, was not that corporations need to share more money with the people who work for them. Is that, no, we need to make more profit, and then just more people just funnel in, and all these college grads, and we need to make these lucrative more jobs. And it's just like, that's not how this works. These motherfuckers make more money and they keep it.
They keep
it. But for the fact that somebody fights them for it. And if you're kneecapping the only other forces that were checking these people, you are kneecapping the trade unions at every single turn, and they're the only freaking bulwark, or however the fuck you say that word, against corporate interests. It's over. Nobody is fighting them anymore. The government's sucking their dicks. Trade unions have no power. Now look at what we have. Record inequality. It's like, and Barry just came out and said, yeah, I was a fucking neoliberal scumbag. I was. That was me.
Sorry. I had no way of knowing. You know, like, as if these critiques weren't available at the time. I mean, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. That was incredible.
No, I mean, it's the thing about Barry, and the thing that's, I think that you and I mean, we don't mean to, like, you know, harp on the guy too much. I mean, but the reason why we do and what we think it's important is because he's smarter and more thoughtful than 99.9% of these fucking dumbass Democrats who don't know shit about anything. Like, Obama is very well versed in history. Obama thinks about history. Obama thinks about his own place in history all the time. Like, you think fucking Neera Tanden knows what the fuck she's talking about anything? No, she's an idiot. But Obama's not. Obama's a very smart guy.
We wouldn't be wasting this much energy on Joe Biden, quite frankly. Like,
no, Joe Biden's an idiot. Joe Biden's an absolute idiot who just kind of goes with the flow. He doesn't know anything. And Obama is clear that he doesn't, that he understands things on a deeper level, that he thinks about things on a deeper level, that he can express himself in ways that are sort of unique to him. He's a very good writer. Like, these are all true. And it's not true about any of these other dumbass Democrats, because let's face it, the vast majority of them are just, like, super stupid. But he can't go there. It's like,
he can't bring himself to say me and all my people were fucking dead wrong. He just cannot bring himself to do it.
And he also can't bring himself to think that he had power. Right. He thinks he was just like, you know, this was just the forces at the time. Like, you know, instead of, like, I was the president, the most powerful man on earth. Like, the lesson that he should have taken from Ronald Reagan is that you can make power. You can influence shit if you're the fucking president. You know, like, you can implement an agenda even if, like, there are forces arrayed against you. You know, that even if people are going to criticize you for it or whatever. Like, you just go with it and then you make the new normal. You wield power. You you influence events. Like Obama was like, oh, wow. Wow, that happened, huh? Crazy, huh? You know, like, wow, I wish it, you know, didn't turn out that way. And it's like, dude, you were the president.
Who was that guy that occupied that office for 8 years? Yeah. Anyway, I just found it fascinating. The media tour continues to be the gift that keeps on giving.
I don't know when it'll end, but yeah, it's giving us great content for the woke bros.
And we just couldn't come on today and not address Barry coming out the closet as neoliberal scum. And so that's our show for today. Make sure you're subscribed and checking out the Bomb Feed, all of our other offerings, whether it be Crazy Sexy Cool, Wednesday Services, Growing Up the Same, the OG show. Of course, make sure you're listening to the Friday Mailbag, the Dad Pod, Cinephobe, you know, Pack Your Knives.
So much content. So much Count the Dings, baby. Man.
And of course, if you can, please, I know it's difficult times, but please become a Patreon at patreon.com/countthedings. Support all and drives all the shit that we do around here, man. And so, Fernando Vila and Rob Lopez, I'm Wazzy Lambre. We out of here. Peace.